The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor Mike, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Manx Radio. It's your chance to have your say. We're open line today and also open line on Monday. Tuesday, it's Department of Infrastructure, Michelle Haywood, MHK, the Minister, will be on Man in Line. So if you have a question regarding infrastructure, store that up till Tuesday. Or in the meantime, you can either stick it on the answer phone, 682631, or email maninline@manxradio. 4 weeks today. It's half term. We'd be happy to know that. And 4 weeks this Sunday, the clocks go back 4 weeks on Sunday. You're being urged to check the price of your shopping at the till. The Office of Fair Trading identified a number of issues during recent inspections. Whether this has affected you, I don't know. Do you ever check your till receipt when you shop somewhere? The OFT says staff recently inspected 31 food retailers across the Isle of Man to ensure customers were charged the prices advertised and that special offers were honoured. Well, they haven't named these retailers. Businesses are legally required to communicate prices clearly, including VAT, where appropriate, to prevent misleading indications such as false reductions or hidden charges. I think, isn't it, VAT is not applicable if it's takeaway? But it is if you stay there. Is that right? More than half of those inspected were issued with advisory enforcement notices, including prices paid differing from those displayed on the shelves or products, expired promotions still advertised when full price was charged, and poor or misleading labelling. Are you aware of this? Have you spotted this? It's confirmed that around a third of the premises were re-inspected, and all but two had made the necessary changes to meet the required standards. Now, you can report incorrect or misleading prices, confusing offers, or false advertising by calling 686500. That's the Office of Fair Trading, 686500, or emailing generalfairtrading@gov.im. And you can report anonymously. That's general.fairtrading@gov.im. I'd be interested to know if you... ever. I mean, the thing is, when you buy, say, a takeaway, you don't get a receipt, do you? Do you? Well, I wonder where this has come from. Anyway, text, email, call and WhatsApp. And what about Tim Crookall? The Minister without portfolio is now Minister without ministerial role. Tim Crookall has resigned as Minister without portfolio. He finds himself conflicted with regard to the North and West Area Plan and the forthcoming transport strategy. Of course, he is a Peel and Glenfaber MHK, and under the rules of collective responsibility, i.e. team membership, it's with deep regret that he stands down from the Council of Ministers. He will remain a member of DHSC. The efficiencies programme will now be overseen by the Chief Minister directly as Chair of Operational Performance and Change. So Tim Crookall out as a minister, and who's not charging the right price for food? Julian's with us now. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. Yeah, it's I seem to remember seeing somewhere that food since 2020 has gone up 37% overall as an inflation market. It's kind of expensive, isn't it?
Well, and also, I mean, remember, a lot of the places, they've had horrendous rises in raw materials. So a lot of the food retailers, I've got every sympathy for anybody who runs a cafe, a restaurant, or a takeaway, because it's often a thankless task. And when you see takeaways sometimes open at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, that really is, you know, dedication beyond the call of duty.
Yeah, although I do notice that local butchers, their meats are cheaper than Tesco by up to 36%. I was looking at that the other day. So visit your local butcher, because they're significantly cheaper from what I can see on quite a lot of their items.
And I'm sure they'll thank you for mentioning that.
Oh, yes. A couple of comments on yesterday's programme. Matt called in yesterday talking about his wife, Nikki's serious health issues after she was given a COVID-19 vaccination.
Yeah.
Just want to wish them every success in getting the recognition for Nikki's injuries and get some proper redress on it. It's been a long time. It's been, I think, 4 years now, so probably a bit of movement on that. Also, I'd just like to reiterate what Duan said about respectful discourse. And a perfect example being when Peter Murcock calls in. I think you'd agree that probably he's the most respectful, articulate and polite person you can possibly imagine on the radio. Very nice to listen to. He is
articulate. He's an intelligent man. Of course, many people don't agree with what he says, and I'm sure he doesn't agree with some things that other people say, but he is exemplary, I think.
Oh, yeah, I'd say that. It's just the respectfulness, that's what I like. Main thing I was interested in, I was interested to hear your conversation with Duan yesterday, and the fact that Cura are effectively breathing down the neck of Manx Radio and other media on the island, and they're holding everyone, including yourself, to extremely high standards. But what's become clear since Charlie Kirk's murder recently and a subsequent comment is that people in public office on the Isle of Man are obviously not held to account, like media and your good self, with Cura. It's also apparent that, unlike the UK, public office holders on the island are not required to abide by something called the Seven Nolan Principles, which are also known as the Seven Principles of Public Life. These were established in the UK 30 years ago in 1995 by Lord Michael Nolan, who was a senior British judge and law lord who passed away in 2007. So the question is, what are these seven Nolan principles that public officials like commissioners on the island don't have to adhere to? So just quickly, the seven principles are selflessness, where public officers should act only in the public interest, integrity, objectivity, accountability, where public officers should be accountable to the public and must submit themselves to scrutiny, openness, especially about their decisions and actions, honesty, and finally, leadership, where they should exhibit these principles in their own behavior and be willing to challenge poor behavior. But if there's no legal framework to enforce consequences for bad behavior in office, this sort of begs the question, Andy, shouldn't there be such legislation in place? And if anyone comes on afterwards, what possible argument is there against public office holders being held to high standards like you are for integrity, accountability, openness, honesty, Andy?
Well, at the back of my mind, don't the Nolan principles apply to the Manx government?
I think there's an overarching principle for it. And, you know, they're kind of the way that you would hope everyone would conduct themselves. But the UK, on their own webpage, is showing that all public office holders are held to account to the seven Nolan principles. So I don't understand. I mean, they seem to be cutting and pasting an awful lot of stuff from the UK. I don't understand why other office holders, like commissioners and other people, are not held to that. And even when you say about that, what about accountability, which is included in that list for, say, huge overspending public money on things like the Liverpool Ferry Terminal or the continuous hemorrhaging of money at Manxcare? No pun intended on that one. Or oversight in conflicts of interest within government departments, which I think was highlighted recently on another Isle of Man media company's headline, which I quote is "The Green Click: Who's Really Running the Isle of Man's Climate Agenda?" So this accountability thing within the Nolan principles, it seems that, you know, it's like FOIs being stocked for the steam packet. I mean, I would have thought that would have been under openness. You know, there's so many things that this could apply to, and I just don't understand why these Nolan principles aren't kind of more widely accepted. And obviously, if they were in legal operation, then there would be proper actual consequences. You know, if somebody does something really rotten or something, then at the moment it appears that it's kind of the Wild West when it comes to public office.
But the underlying problem here, or the issue, if you like, is that and this is a worldwide phenomenon, is that traditional media, the media that is, I'm talking about newspapers, television, radio, anything that has a public license, and that, you know, if you like, bricks and mortar media, is up against the wild west of the internet. And since, well, it's about 2012 that social media really took off. And, you know, social media is regulated or not regulated where the server is. So if the server's in Kyrgyzstan or Kazakhstan, then really whatever happens on that server is subject to that jurisdiction, i.e. not. So, and this is the whole point, and I think this is what came out yesterday, is that I'm not responsible for what people say on social media. It's nothing to do with me. You know, whatever people say on social media is up to the social media. What we do on Manx Radio, and I am perfectly happy with Kira's role, Julian, perfectly happy. I've been subject to regulation all my broadcasting life in the 50-odd years I've been doing this, whether it was the IBA in Britain or the Radio Authority or Ofcom, perfectly happy to it. And the FCC in America, the CTRC in Canada, they're all there to regulate what goes on the public airwaves. So Ivan and the team at Kira, absolutely fine, because if anything, if anybody transgresses or I transgress, more than happy for it to be regulated at that level. Would that it were for social media, because as we know, what happens on social media, particularly at 2 o'clock in the morning, is nobody's business.
Yeah, I mean, social media, they had the doors open wide in 1996. With something called Section 230. And that was a provision of the 1996 Communications Decency Act, which protected online platforms from liability for content posted by the users. So a lot of people have said that Section 230, which permeates all the way around the world, exactly as you've said, there's like an overarching liability protection for social media. That's where you get this difference from where Kira can't interfere with it because of this provision. But coming back to people in office, it just seems strange that, you know, you are subjected to Kira really breathing down your neck all the time. I mean, you do have to be careful, as we all do on the radio. But people in office don't seem to have any of that whatsoever.
Well, I think the majority of people in office absolutely behave themselves. I mean, the vast majority of politicians are people of integrity and people of first of all, good manners. That's the first thing as well. So most people are. So there may be occasions when some people aren't. And I think the audience in terms of media and readership in terms of newspapers and the electorate will make their own judgments.
Yeah, I mean, we have noticed one or two office holders in recent times have perhaps, you know, gone a bit off the reservation with things that they've been saying, even on Manx Radio. Perhaps it's prudent. You know, that we talked about the slippery slope, and I'm just wondering whether perhaps some sort of legislation might be required just to make sure that standards are upheld, just like Manx Radio and the other media, you know, written media and radio media on the island.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I mean, what you say about, I'm not conscious of Kira breathing down my neck. In fact, they've got a very, very light touch. I think in terms of standards, if I may say, I think I know what I'm doing where this is concerned. I've been doing this for long enough to know and done Man in Line for many years. And the vast majority of the audience understand. Everybody has their say. It's an opinion program. And we don't insult each other because, first of all, it's bad manners. And secondly, it doesn't get you anywhere, Julian.
Absolutely. It's always counterproductive when people are, with no argument, are casting aspersions on you. It becomes very apparent that there's actually no substance in the argument if you have to resort to name-calling and stuff like that. But no, I quite agree with you.
Okay.
But I just think, yeah. Anyway, thank you very much. Thanks, Andy.
Good to have you. Thanks for talking today. And is Betty with us now? Hello, Betty.
Oh, hi, Andy. I just want to explain why. Somebody wondered why an atheist would not want religion, would want, rather, religion to be taught in schools.
Yeah.
And this is my reasoning. In the Isle of Man and the UK, I think religion should be taught, but not indoctrinated. And the reason why is because it's part of our history. It's the reason why we're like what we are. And although there's, I think nearly all religion should be taught, but the main version should be Christianity, because this is a Christian country. And although some versions of Christianity haven't modernized, most of them have. And I think that Christianity at present aligns with present-day views and gives us a model to live our lives. Even I believe that, even though I'm an atheist. And I think children should be encouraged at home and in school to learn, but to question and think for themselves. There shouldn't be any indoctrination or force-fed teaching of anything. Children should be encouraged to find joy in reading, and learning about everything.
At what point, Betty, did you, you say you're an atheist, at what point did you move away, or were you ever religious?
Oh, yes. I moved away when I was nursing, when I saw so much pain, and I just felt there couldn't possibly be a God who would allow such things to happen. That's when it started. And I don't want everybody to be atheists, because there's more hope in believing in a benevolent God and an afterlife. I simply can't think that way anymore.
Oh, crikey, the afterlife. Well, that's a whole other program, Betty. Okay. Thanks for calling today.
Okay, bye-bye.
Have a good weekend. Good to talk to you. Well, the public wants the government to get its own house in order before taking more cash from the taxpayer to fund the health service. The Treasury Minister, Dr. Allenson, said it was announced it. The plans for the NHS levy were scrapped. More than 3,800 people, that's a lot of people, 3,800 people responded to a public consultation on the proposals earlier this year. Here's Dr. Allenson.
We had 3,800 people contributing to that. Vast majority of people saw that there needed to be extra investment in health, but actually said what they wanted was for government to get its own house in order first and make sure it's providing as efficient and cost-effective services as possible. That's what we've been doing this last year. That's what this time last year the Chief Minister announced, the savings programme of trying to make sure we could drive value for money for the Isle of Man taxpayer. That's what we'll be continuing to do.
Because that health levy certainly looked on paper to be an income tax rise, but called a health levy.
The idea of having ring-fenced extra revenue for healthcare is not something that's new. We've been talking a lot at the government conference so far about the worldwide stresses in terms of public expenditure, particularly on health, but also for education on our island, and how you deal with that while still preserving some of the ethos of the National Health Service, which I think most people hold quite dear on our island.
That's Dr. Allenson, and well, how about that? So where's the money going to come from then? If it's not going to come from a health levy, what will happen? Juan's with us now. Hi, Juan.
How are you today, Andy?
Very well. What's on your mind? It's a lovely day. What's the weather like where you are?
It's very good. Very nice. Very sunny. Nice, pleasant 22. Just doing a tidy up a few things from yesterday. I think remember that film, was it Star Trek film, The Wrath of Khan? I think I got The Wrath of Bonzo yesterday, didn't I? just a few points just to tidy up on that. First of all, when Stephen came on after I spoke yesterday, I just wanted to tidy up first of all. Stephen seemed to think that it was my post that was put on about the Lizzie Shimon incident. It actually wasn't my post, and I think he called me Julian, then he called me Julian. It was actually Julian's post that I commented on underneath. So it wasn't my post, Stephen. The comments that I made underneath actually were the same comments that I made yesterday about being respectful in office. And that was the comments that I made on there. If he wants to go back and look, it's on the politics page. It's there to be seen. So I just wanted to clarify that for Stephen. Also on his points that he made about protecting the borders, I totally agree with Stephen. Stephen, I agree with you. It would be fantastic to have open borders, and we don't want to know who's living down the road. But because of the failure of the English government in protecting their borders, and because we have an open border, we do have an issue. And that's the problem that we've got, is the undesirables that may be coming into the island. And I totally agree with Stephen's points. We're getting fear fed into us so much at the moment, and not necessarily, you know, do we need to take it too much on board, but we do need some kind of protection. On investigation into the prisons, yes, we have got a lot of, about 40-50% of the prison is with drugs at the moment. Question maybe for Home Affairs. Why was a Liverpool drugs criminal arrested in Liverpool getting on the plane here, but then transported to the Isle of Man and imprisoned here, which is costing us money? I don't know if there's a reason for that. Is there a financial reason or is it a political reason? But yes, we have got people in there from Liverpool in our prisons with drug connections. So just clarifying that point really as well. Listening to Julie Edge, and I believe she has said that she's standing for election next time round, she announced. We've got 30-odd pieces, at least, of legislation on the table at the moment that this government wants to try and push through before their term is finished. At least 30 that I know of, including the Extradition Act, which, for a quick look at that, is very outdated and needs reformed. So that's another point on that one. Now then, just going on to what Bonzo was saying yesterday. Unfortunately, Bonzo, I've got better things to do than be down at the protest. If you think that I'm a Tommy Robinson lover, no, I think like people like Robinson and Farage are saying what the people think at the moment, or the majority of the people in England are thinking. I was contemplating going to it, but I thought that might disrupt my travel plans, so I didn't go to it. But we're talking about, again, the media said 100,000 people were there, where actually the footage shows there was more nearer to 2 million people actually down in London at the time. So again, false media narrative coming out there. You know, respectfully to Bonzo, no, I wasn't at the Tommy Robinson event. He's talking about religion. Forgive me if I'm wrong here, Andy. I think if we go to court, we swear on the Bible. Majority of people swear on the Bible, I think.
You don't have to. It's not compulsory.
It's not compulsory, but it's part of the way that the Christianity is in our system, embedded in our system. You know, it's like, you know, if, for example, Bonzo went to court for defamation of character, you know, would he have to swear on the Bible? So I don't know that all this. I'd call myself centrist more than far right. You keep putting on about this far right and such like, but I'm more about common sense and centering than anything else, to be honest, Andy.
All right.
But yeah, that's basically it for today. I think I just wanted to clear up on yesterday, and move on from that. Cheers, Andy.
Good to hear from you. Thanks, Duan. Have a good weekend. Andy dropped a note in. This is 667. Not doing the NHS levy proves the point that politicians are spineless. when it comes to making a hard decision before an election just to keep their own jobs ahead of doing what's right for future generations. The NHS levy has been thrown out. We don't quite know if we need more money, where that's going to come from. Well, we know where it'll come from eventually. It'll come from you and me, but we don't quite know when. What do you think about what Stu Peters has been saying about the fact that we should hold a referendum on net zero policies? The middle MHK, Stu Peters, in December, he's going to be tabling a motion calling for the vote to coincide with the 2026 election. The idea originally came from the former MHK, the Douglas South MHK, or Douglas Central MHK, Paul Quine, who said it's the most important thing that we need to address. It's going to cost us an absolute fortune. It may be ruinous in terms of the cost, adopting net zero policies. And we need to get the voice of the people. And we can do it relatively cheaply by having a referendum at the same time as the election on the 24th of September next year. Got any thoughts? Here's Ken with us now. Hello, Ken.
Afternoon. I've always got to... eye for a bargain when it comes to chocolate bars for various reasons.
Yeah.
And in a revamped store in Duke Street in Douglas, they were selling Galaxy bars, £2.10 for an 80-gram bar. Bargain. Bought two, went to the till, charged £6.60.
What?
Yes. The guy said, oh, I said, it's on offer. Doesn't say offer, that's the price. Don't need your co-op card. It's there. So he called somebody. The guy came and said, oh, that's out of date. Sorry about that.
No, that's wrong. Whatever the price...
Well, no, no.
Whatever the price is advertised is what you should pay.
Ah, there's a sting in the tail. He said they're only £1.33 now.
Oh, crikey. Oh, well, I was wrong then about the price.
I'll have four then. Anyway, the Treasury Minister, are they ever going to tell us when the income tax went at 20, you know, the extra 2%, how much has been ring fenced? How much have they collected extra?
No, they haven't told us.
No, right. And the next complaint we got came back on the Manxman gateway to the Isle of Man in the pouring rain last Friday, 20 yards in the open air, down the gangway, and now they've got a 20-yard sprint to the walkway in the pouring rain, and then there's one gap in the middle of that walkway still with the rain. I just saw, I think when the minister was on, she said it was only a temporary thing and they were looking at it.
But yeah.
It's still, it's just, I don't know, it's amazing.
Well, this has been going on for ages.
It is, yes. It all goes back to the, you know, the Manxman arrived without the pier being extended.
Yeah. Well, this is certainly something we'll bring up with Michelle Haywood then on Tuesday.
Yes, if you could. Because I'm out on a Tuesday, so I'm not available.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks, Ken. Have a good weekend. Thanks for that. I always have and always will cut my own private hedge on the roadside. This is 490. What always baffles me is how many people won't give an inch for you. It doesn't seem to matter how much high-vis or cones you put out. Some people will almost take you out. It's as though they possibly think you shouldn't be doing that on an open road, as in cutting hedges. Now the DOI have sent letters saying it's up to the landowner to cut hedges. People need to be aware of this. Can you imagine the chaos involved if everyone had a road closure every 3 weeks scattered around the island to cut a hedge? It's probably the same people who won't give an inch for a cyclist. That's an interesting point. If you have a hedge or a tree that's overgrowing a road, how do you have to get a road closing order? It has to be something official to stick some cones out or to put some high-vis on. Howard's with us now. Hello, Howard.
Hi, Andy. We were just talking to the other lad that was on there, Christian. There's been quite a bit of discussion on your programme about religion, the lack of it, the pushing of it, the various aspects. But I've been downtown several times, and we were in a Tesco yesterday, and stores available, but on the shelves were chocolate Father Christmas sweets, chocolate snowmen. And about 5 or 6 feet away from them was Halloween. But if you go into the spa shops, not all of them, I don't think, but there's Easter eggs on sale.
What?
Yes. They're reduced. They're this year's stock that they're selling off.
Oh, I see. It's old stock, yeah.
Yeah, but there's nothing stopping them doing that. But having said that, you've got Christmas stock in Tesco, Halloween in Tesco's, Halloween and the other shops, Easter eggs, and the children are going round, and it's little wonder that they're confused. You know, what is it? They're no longer a religion in a sense, according to these larger supermarket shops, etc. They're a commodity and they are a business item. And they'll sell them. And if you ask the children who was Jesus, who was Mary and whatnot, and they wouldn't know. But they look at the shelf and say, I want. And that's all it's come to now. Religion, unfortunately, is becoming a byword. And, you know, as it is, there's no way you can stop them. They can put on the shelves what they want as long as they're, you know, in date, etc. But how farcical it is for the... And those ones at Tesco have been there for at least a fortnight. And the other ones, I looked at them one day just out of curiosity, and they're out of date next year, 2026. I don't know about the Halloween stuff, but imagine a child coming in there and, Father Christmas. Christmas must be around the corner. Well, there's Easter eggs here, Mum. When was that? Can I have something for me Halloween?
Yeah. Very, very confusing.
This is what's confusing the children. Not the religion. It's the fact that it's been commercialised to a point where religion is going to be just secondary. It's crazy. And that chap that's just asked about the ring fencing, pensioners on their ordinary government pension, state pension, they'll not be paying income tax. But there's quite a lot of people, myself included, who were lucky to get a company pension. And I pay tax on that, and I did pay the 2%. And I assume I paid the 1% this year. They were boasting early on in the year that they had X number of millions extra coming in. But there was no mention, as that chap said, what had been ring-fenced out of that extra money for the health services.
Well, at some point we will learn, but as you say, and of course in the end we always pay, so I suppose as the bill payers we should know, shouldn't we?
Well, you'd be entitled to, because it is your money that's going in. And even if it's a collective one, you say X number of millions was collected extra as opposed to 2023. In 2024, there was so much, and, you know, they deliberately put that up 2% so that to get the money, and they did say it was going to be ring-fenced for the health service. But there's been nothing come out of it since, and... Mr. Allenson's keeping his powder dry, not saying anything.
All right. Thanks, Howard. Have a good weekend.
And you, take care.
Take care.
Bye now.
Anthony dropped a note in. That is Anthony341. Religious education in secondary schools might encourage respect, religious literacy, and empathy. Betty makes a valuable and important point about better literacy in schools. However, respect and empathy can't be easily taught. These qualities are about lifelong learning. And with other subjects, demands on the secondary school curriculum and teacher training, well, there are no easy solutions. That's Anthony.
That new furniture feeling, it can become a bit of an obsession. And that's just how we like it. Fresh collections are now in at Lifestyle Furniture. Beautiful living and dining ranges, sumptuous sofas, sensational handmade beds from Harrison Spinks, Enchanted House, and more. Plus, dazzling art and decor to complete the look. Find your new obsession. Visit Lifestyle Furniture. Pop in at Snugborough Trading Estate, Union Mills. Open 7 days a week.
Spectrum Windows. If your house needs a new look, make it look like new again. Spectrum Windows, Spectrum Windows. Quality through and through. Great work guaranteed to you. Spectrum Windows, Spectrum Windows. Spectrum Windows.
Hi, Liz. I see you've had your garage converted. We're desperate for more room.
Yes. Come through and have a look. John called Manx Property Conversions. We now have an extra bedroom, but it could be another reception room, kids' playroom or office. They also did our conservatory roof last year. We were so impressed, we got them back to convert the garage.
Wow, I need that. What's their number again?
Call MPC on 450500. That's 450500. Or find them on Facebook at Manx Property Conversions.
LVW Law are a team of experienced advocates, solicitors and barristers, trained mediators and international arbitrators. Let them help you achieve the best possible outcome in your case with their wide range of legal services for businesses, corporate and private clients. You can trust the LVW Law team to fight for you every step of the way. Visit lvwlaw.com and make an appointment today. Your first 30 minutes are free. LVW Law, they're on your side.
Are you a small charity here on the Isle of Man? Are you looking for volunteers, hoping to raise awareness and chasing those crucial pounds and pennies to support your work? Well, Manx Radio can help. You could be our next 1-3 Charity of the Week. With daily on-air coverage, podcast and social media promotion, we can help support you and those you help. Just email the numbers 123@manxradio.com and listen out for the feature each weekday between 1 and 3pm. The Charity of the Week, brought to you by Kell Properties.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
17 minutes before one. Peter's with us now. Hello, Peter.
Oh, hello, and it's Peter Murcott here. Interesting calls made. They prove a point which I came across in a book of Proverbs, and it says, as you think of others, so they think of you. And you think about that. You find that respect usually goes both ways. And I was grateful for the comments, obviously, of Julian and Dewan. And it's very true, actually, that you give away far more than people realize on what you think about other people. And I found it proved time and time again. Now, just a couple of things here, having thanked those gentlemen for their very kind comments. I was very interested that Stu Peters has got this recommendation of having a referendum about the climate change. Absolutely spot on. I agree with him 100%. I was also interested, you mentioned Paul Quine, a person whom I've known for several years and a very wise counsellor. He was very good when he was in the House of Keys. And I was very interested to hear what he had to say about that. So absolute support for what Stu Peters is saying. And he's quite right. We should have a say on this. A lot of money being spent on this so-called climate change, and the public is not properly consulted about it. But I'd just like to make one comment. You've had a very interesting response of what I rang in on Monday about religious education. I can't possibly cover all the points, and I don't think I'd be given the time anyway, but I'll just make two points. Number one, on indoctrination. I used to be head of a church-aided school. In the UK, church-aided schools have a very much stronger contact with the Anglican Church, which is what my school was, than most schools would have. Now, when I interviewed parents coming to the school, the first question I was used to ask them was, do you understand what a church-aided school is? And usually they didn't. So I explained to them that it had a strong connection with the church. However, I used to emphasize to them the legal rights that the Education Act gave to them, and that is that we were required to give, I think it was 2 or 3 weeks notice if we were going to have a service in the church so that the parents could withdraw their children. And also, I used to emphasize to them that if they in any sense, shape or form disagreed with Christian education as would take place in scripture lessons. They had rites, and I said they would be fully observed, and if ever they wanted to withdraw children, it would be done in a very, very careful manner, and it would be done in a way that was appropriate to supporting what their views were. So this indoctrination argument doesn't really hold water. Quite frankly, we ought to give rites of withdrawal on one or two other subjects that do impact on religion for which there are not rites of withdrawal. So we always very jealously guarded the rights of individual people. The other point about the whole thing, you hear about all these other religions that ought to be coming on. I honestly think that they haven't had, perhaps the people haven't really thought this through. I was in primary education for 26 years. It is not possible, even in the time that used to be allotted for the Christian religion, to do justice to teach it. Therefore, if you were going to bring umpteen others, it would be so superficial as to be useless. And in any event, on this whole thing of indoctrination, you cannot indoctrinate a person into being a Christian, because faith is a gift of God. And you cannot force it. And I used to emphasize this to the children. I can't make somebody into a Christian. I can only present to them what the teaching was, because it's something which anyone who is a Christian and who understands scripture would know that that is something you can't do. Indoctrination, then, is a very, very foolish, ill-informed accusation, and it just does not happen. And if anyone was unwise enough to try to do it, then they would soon learn their lesson, that you just can't do that. And so it's biblically unsound.
Do you think there's any currency in them when people have been suggesting that if we are going to have religious education, say at a secondary level, that students should know about the four main religions, really, Christianity, Islam, Hinduism and Buddhism? Is there any way that you can contextualise those religions?
I come back to the point I've just made. There is not literally the time in the school timetable to do justice. I think my take has always been, and it won't change, hasn't changed ever since I've been here, and it didn't change when I was in the when I was in primary education, that the question of other beliefs should come incidentally in other parts of the curriculum, which are sufficient for what's often called toleration. But there is just not, leaving aside other arguments, there isn't the time. I mean, we, as I say, I was head of a church-aged school, and we could never really do justice to what the school was established for, which was primarily to give a Christian education. There just isn't the time. You've got so many subjects on the timetable, okay, and you can't intrude on the necessary secular subjects. And it's a very practical matter, and this is never referred to. So there we are. Very interesting comments, and thank you once again to Julian and to Juan for their kind comments. I don't get too many people who applaud what I'm saying and say those things. I get, quite frankly, I get more of the other sort.
But well, I think, Peter, what's come through is it is possible to disagree with somebody and still have a rational conversation and to be of, pardon the pun, but of good faith with other people.
Well, you've got an excellent example there, if I can come back to the person I mentioned just a few moments ago, in Stu Peters. Stu Peters has got probably opposite views to me, and yet, at the personal level, I can always get on very well with him and have some very rational, informed conversations, and I can with one or two other former MHKs as well, who've got very different views from what I hold. It's all a question of whether you're courteous with other people and whether you respect them as people and respect their rights as you hope that they will respect yours. And where there's mutual respect, there's no problem. It's when people start making all kinds of ill-informed comments just to try and silence you. Okay. That's where the problem arises.
All right. Have a good weekend, Peter. Thank
you. Yeah, thank you, Andrew. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Nice to talk to you. And we've got John with us now. Hello, John.
Oh, hi, Andy. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thanks. What's on your mind?
Two things, Andy, two. The first one being Stu Peter's motion is tabled for a referendum for the wind farms, green energy. That's flawed before it starts, because the people who this really matters to are too young and they can't vote. And I think he knows this, and that's why he's tabled it. That's my view. The second point is, I can't mention this lady's name because it kind of shivers down my spine. This lady in Ramsgate made this comment about Charlie Kirk. It hasn't gone away. Charlie Kirk's wife, dead in a stadium of over 60,000 people. She forgave her husband's killer. Now, I've only one comment to say about that, and it's from the Bible, and it's quite applicable. Forgive them, for they don't know what they do. And that's religion. You'll find religion will navigate you through life, and it's like a moral compass sometimes. It does help you. Yeah. Okay. That's all I've got to say, Andy.
Good. Have a good weekend. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Teresa says, we were contacted by the DOI to cut our hedge back. My husband requested safety equipment to enable us to do the job, and to be fair, they did that. Gave us cones, hazard tape, and instructions where the cones should be placed. As I say, this was years ago, though in reality, if people were more considerate when they see somebody trying to maintain their property, it wouldn't be an issue, says Teresa in Port St. Mary. And I got a note in from Morris, who said, what's Stu Peters been saying? Stu Peters wants to have a referendum on net zero. This is Mr. Peters, who is the one of the middle MHKs.
It seems that we're absolutely committed to net zero targets, which are all pretty out there, and there's no real reason for them, but we've just gone along with what other people have decided to do.
I mean, those other people might be called scientists, though, mightn't they, who actually see that there has to be something that people do, otherwise, potentially, the climate is going to be in a very sore state.
Well, there are lots of different points of view on this, and we've all been sold on this idea that 97% of scientists around the world believe that climate change is man-made and is reversible. And actually, that 97% figure is a complete hoax.
Are you getting this from anywhere that's a verified source, or just what you're watching on YouTube?
No, all sorts of different sources on this, all sorts of experts, including people who are previous members of the IPCC, have said that that isn't what happened. There wasn't a 97% consensus. It was a lot smaller. It was like less than 1% of scientists agreed that climate change was man-made and was reversible. Now what I'm trying to do is to find out whether or not the public of the Isle of Man agree with spending absolute fortunes, millions and millions of pounds, on something that isn't going to change anything.
Isn't there something, though, about having vision? What if the Victorians had just thought, well, we won't bother with any of this building? Or what if the administrations from decades ago thought, well, we don't need a reservoir, really? But actually, they didn't do it for them. They did it for future generations, and surely that's what the net zero argument is all about.
I could sign up to that straight away if it was going to make any difference.
How do you know it's not going to make any difference?
How do you know it is? Because all the experts that I've read about, we're talking about people like Bjorn Lomborg, we're talking about people like the former chief of Greenpeace, loads and loads of people are saying, whatever you do, it's not going to make any difference. This is just a natural phenomenon. The earth cools and warms up all the time, and this is natural, and it's not to do with man-made CO2.
When the man in line's not on air, call Manx Radio to leave your opinion for broadcast on 682 631.
Well, what do you think? Text, email, call and WhatsApp. Regarding Loganair, says Malcolm, I wonder if they've got the battery issue the wrong way round. Lead acid is safer than lithium. And lots of messages, and thank you very much indeed for all the messages. I can't get to all of them. We'll try and get to most of them. I couldn't phone in yesterday, but it's not the food till receipts you want to worry about. It's the pub till receipts you want to worry about. On two separate occasions, I've been massively overcharged for drinks in pubs on the Isle of Man. It's not the staff getting anything out of it. It's just that they're so desperate to clear their till, they'll charge anything, anyone for anything. The most recent incident, I was charged £34.70 for three drinks. Ah, but what were they? It was rectified once I spotted it, but it's very prevalent, says NT. What about this? And remember, if you want to get in touch out of hours, then the email address is maninline@manxradio.com and the answer phone is 682631. I've experienced overcharging at Crosby Co-op, says Bob. Is that true? I'm sure Crosby Co-op would refute that anyway. Visiting for the TT and for the Manx GP. I pointed it out, but there was a lack of interest. One time I waited about 10 minutes for it to be sorted. I left two bags of shopping at the till, and I left, says Bob. Well, you can get in touch with the Office of Fair Trading. If you are overcharged, then you need to point it out, and if it's not rectified, tell the Office of Fair Trading about it. If food outlets are overcharging, then surely that needs to be rectified. Well, that's it. Have a fantastic weekend. Thanks to Christian on the phone today. Remember, on Tuesday, Misha Harewood is here. Enjoy your weekend.
As Manx is the man in line, Manx Radio.
W-I-N.